47. Assimilation. Howard, April 2344, Jabberwocky. It took 2 days to get the Hunter over to the Alexandrian flotilla. To compare floaters to aerial barges would be an insult to barges. But they could be persuaded to tack and even to swim slightly upwind, using the keel as a sort of fin. I became curious enough about how this was done that I took a flight around our temporary home. It took no effort at all to convince Bridget to come along. I found a number of Alexandrian troops perched up around the base of the keel, occasionally prodding it with spears. "What are they doing?" I asked Bridget over the intercom. She thought for a moment.
"My first guess would be that they're using something like acupuncture to get the floater to behave how they want. Poke here and it turns left, poke there and it starts to swim, and so on."
Wow. The dragons were literally hanging upside down on the underside of the floater, digging in with their clawed feet. Dragons were not like bats. This wasn't a normal lifestyle choice. That couldn't be fun or comfortable. We circled around and landed back on the floater, then merged with the crowds. It was noteworthy that once the Alexandrians had taken over, they really didn't change anything. The village elders were given a few instructions on what would or would not be allowed. Workers were ordered to make some modifications to all equipment that contained fire. It soon became obvious why, as well. When the Hunter had been allowed to drift with the wind, the air currents on top had been minimal to non-existent. Now that we were beating across the wind, there was a definite breeze which made fires harder to control and more likely to flare up. The Alexandrians had obviously done this before. As we slowly pulled up to the flotilla, I got my first good look close up. It was impressive. The Hunter, large as it was, lost some perspective against a distant background, but up close with other floaters, some larger, some smaller, the scale of these behemoths became apparent. And I could see that the dragons had a solution to the bat lifestyle problem. Scaffolding had been constructed around the base of the keel on the other floaters. On some, work was still in progress, and the floaters were tied together with multiple long lines. I could see out of the corner of my eye that Bridget was frowning. I turned and raised an eyebrow without saying anything. She returned my glance, then gave a small shrug.
"This is very well planned, Howard. These modifications, the tie-offs, the way they've got all the floaters at the same altitude, it must be for something. They are deliberately turning all the individual floaters into some kind of super floater. And they must have a reason. How do we find out?"
Ask someone? Bridget started to give me an irritated glare, then apparently thought better of it.
"Well, why not?" she said.
Wasting no time, she marched up to the nearest Alexandrian, as usual, easily identifiable by the bright blue and white armband. I stood back, giving her room to work. I didn't want the guard or soldier or whatever he was to feel crowded or threatened. Plus, one-on-one seemed more casual and spontaneous and less nosy and spy-ish. Bridget pointed to the scaffolding, to the guy lines, to the uniform altitude, and asked what it was all about. The guard, whatever he was, gave her a funny look and whistled. Two other soldiers double-timed over, and now I was certain of their occupation because they had their spears at port arms. Bridget tried to back away, looking alarmed, but the first soldier grabbed her arm. I actually saw Bridget make the decision not to end him. Just as well.
"What's going on?"
she cried, laying on the innocent and confused. The guard shook his head, which I thought was unnecessarily ambiguous, and said,
"Go with these soldiers. You'll get your answers."
Bridget glanced quickly in my direction and intercommed me.
Howard, should I cooperate?
Yes, I replied. I'll follow. If they notice me, just say I'm your mate and I'm probably worried. It's not even a lie. If we have to, we'll bust out and come back later with different features. She nodded in response, which the soldier took as acquiescence. He gestured, and the other two stepped aside to make room for Bridget in the middle. A moment later, all three were airborne, and 2 seconds after that, I followed. It soon became obvious that they were heading for a smaller floater in the middle of the fleet. I started to glide down to follow Bridget and her escort, but I was intercepted by a squad of 5 Alexandrians, spears at the ready. I briefly considered going through them, but the fact was that Bridget didn't appear to be in real trouble. At least, not yet. I veered off and landed on the next floater over, up in a tree where I could keep an eye on things. The squad hovered for a moment, then concluding I'd gotten the message, they flew back to their post. I intercommed Bridget. Keep me in the loop. In response, she offered me a video stream of what she was seeing and hearing. An older dragon, presumably some kind of majordomo, came hobbling over within moments and exchanged muttered comments with the squad leader. Then he faced Bridget.
You seem to have an active mind. We keep our eyes open for smart people. You'll find working for Alexander very rewarding, commensurate with your contributions.
Assuming I want to work for Alexander, Bridget said.
The majordomo smiled and nodded to the squad leader. He casually pulled out a machete and tapped it into his other hand, suggestively.
You'll kill me?
The majordomo huffed in contempt.
Of course not. What use are you dead? We'll clip your wings. You will be working for Alexander one way or the other.
Bridget looked from one to the other.
Doing what? What's so important that you need me of all people?
You have shown indications of being intelligent and probably educated. We need people like you for analyzing the records.
You have written records? Why didn't you open with that? I'm in.
Both dragons looked surprised. Apparently Bridget's reaction was not normal.
They have records, she intercommed. I have to see this. I can leave later.
Gotcha, I replied. Keep me updated.
Can you read?
The majordomo asked.
More than just common signs, I mean.
Yes, I'm a little rusty. It's been a few years.
Bridget was exaggerating a little, I knew. The gamer analysis had included basic dragon writing, but there wasn't a lot to read in general society except, as the majordomo had implied, business signage and such.
Can you do numbers?
Yes, basic arithmetic.
Then you have a place here for as long as you want it. Follow me, please.
Bridget was taken to a ground-level building that must have been grand for dragon construction, about the size of a barn with multiple mezzanines. I watched through her eyes as she looked around. Perhaps 2 dozen dragons at tables were reading scrolls and occasionally writing notes. More dragons flew around, fetching and retrieving scrolls from racks. Some of the dragons at tables were missing wing feathers, or, in a couple of cases, wings.
This, said the majordomo with an expansive wave of an arm, is all the written knowledge of the continent of Atlantis. Alexander makes a point of copying all written records from other libraries.
Or taking them, I commented.
There's a lot more going on here than they're admitting to, Bridget replied. You notice the mutilations?
Uh-huh. Slaves? Prisoners? The majordomo seemed to be waiting for a reaction. Bridget glanced at him, then back at the library.
I don't remember anyone visiting my hometown and copying our library. How far east have you been?
I'm sure we have the same information in here from other sources.
Ooh, Bridget had hit a nerve. I wondered how she'd play that.
Life cycle of the trout, she said. Interdependency with the floaters? It's my field of study. It's why I've been flying so far west with my mate.
Major Domo frowned.
Interdependency? How do you mean?
The floaters spread fish eggs. In the process of dragging their tendrils through lakes, they pick up eggs, then deposit them in the next lake. That keeps the fish population distributed, even if one lake is getting overfished.
Bridget gave him a hard look.
Your habit of collecting all the floaters together is going to affect the fish population. Might already be doing so.
Major Domo took a step back, all bravura gone.
Wait here. Feel free to look around, talk to people.
He hurried off, waving his arms to someone off stage. You sure know how to take the starch out of a stuffed shirt, I said over the intercom. I could hear the amusement in her voice.
That was a bonus. The important thing is I've stirred the pot. Maybe I can get some introductions to the higher-ups.
Major Domo came scurrying back.
Yes, scurrying.
The haughty I'm in charge attitude was gone.
Alexander will grant you an audience.
When?
Now, of course. Follow me.
The small central floater was, as it turned out, Alexander's residence, seat of government, and throne room. Bridget was taken to a large building high in the branches of the tallest tree in the town. In no time at all, she found herself in front of a dragon seated on a large seat or chaise or something. I examined the item through the video feed. Dragon furniture didn't really correspond to human norms, given the anatomical differences, but the item definitely filled the function of a human throne. It was deliberately big, ornate, and raised on a small dais so that the occupant looked down on everyone around him. Alexander was old, but not old as in geriatric, more like a master sergeant a year away from retirement. He was hard, well-muscled, and covered in scars. It was obvious that he hadn't achieved his current position purely by backroom shenanigans. I looked around for a display of dragon skulls, but didn't find one. Missed opportunity, as far as I was concerned. Then I spotted another item just at the edge of the feed. Turn your head to the right, Bridget. What is that? Bridget turned her head, and we were looking at... I wasn't sure what we were looking at, honestly. It seemed to be on a pedestal, like an art display. Torches were lit around it, making me wonder how Bridget had missed it on the way in. It was large, maybe 30 feet long, pointed at both ends. A canoe? I said, perplexity in my voice. Why would they have or need a canoe?
Oh, that's not the half of it, she replied. Look at this.
The canoe expanded as Bridget engaged telescopic vision, zooming in on the structure. I found myself looking at part of what I supposed could be an aircraft serial number on the side of the canoe. One written in no script or alphabet that I'd ever seen. And on a smaller dais beside the canoe was, well, something. It looked like a retrieved bit of wreckage, perhaps part of a Scut transceiver assembly, but not one of ours. Oh, I think we've just entered the Twilight Zone, I muttered.
Bridget, can you... Later, Howard, I have to deal with Alexander.
Fine. But while she was hobnobbing with royalty, I was going to send this on to Mario.
I've been told you have an interesting theory about trout, Alexander said. I'd like to hear it from you.
Bridget repeated what she'd told the Major Domo with a little more detail.
And what makes you think this is true?
Alexander asked.
Observation. It's easy enough to verify. Fly down and perch near the end of a tendril after a floater has been through a lake. Fish eggs are unmistakable.
Are they?
Alexander said quizzically.
I confess, I couldn't describe fish eggs if asked.
I study these things, though. It's my vocation.
And you think we might be upsetting this process?
I've seen your flotilla. You've gathered up most of the floaters in the area. They're tied together. They're not floating around, dragging through lakes. They're not doing their job. It will affect fish populations. It may already have done so, since I'm hearing people talk about the reduced catch these days.
Alexander smiled.
I think you've got cause and effect reversed.
He motioned.
Major Domo will give you access to the histories. You can make your own decision.
Major Domo came up and Alexander said,
Give her an apartment. In the morning she'll review the fish catch statistics.
My mate,
Bridget interjected,
can join you. As long as he stays out of the way,
Alexander responded. I'd forwarded the image of the canoe and a sudar scan of the piece of wreckage taken by one of our small spy drones to Mario with a query about whether his group had lost any drones or if he recognized the alphabet from any of the civilizations that the others had destroyed. He'd promised to check and get back to me. Bridget and I were back in Trantor, our drannies curled up in a small apartment in the trees. They would alert us if anything needed our attention, but for the moment we could relax. Bridget was re-examining her videos, and I was staring stupidly at the partial serial number when I received a call back from Mario. Nope, he said without preamble when I took the call. I checked with all my crew. No one has seen anything like that alphabet. And no, we're not in the habit of painting fictional serial numbers on our drones just to screw with you. Although now that I think of it, sorry, too late. Anyway, we don't know where the wreckage came from then, but it looks like the dragons found it and made a canoe from it. How? Dragons don't have anything like the technology to work modern alloys. You could cold hammer hull plates into rough shapes. Use local materials for jointing if you can't drill a hole. I paused for a moment. I bet that canoe is really light and rigid, far more so than anything they could possibly build with natural materials.
Light enough for a couple of dragons to carry,
Bridget interjected, having followed the conversation. Yep, I think you could get six in it at night, carry it in shifts at the end of ropes, and you could probably get across the ocean. Bridget shook her head.
It would be risky, and you wouldn't know if there was anything at the end of your trip.
Polynesians, I replied. They found and colonized most of the Pacific Islands with nothing but ocean currents and seabirds to guide them.
Wait, that doesn't track,
Mario said with a frown. You said the canoe is there, on your side. Shouldn't it be on the other continent, Lemuria? Could dragons from the west have come this way? I suggested. No dragons on the west continent. No floaters, either, Mario said, shaking his head. It's a completely different ecosystem. Also much less tectonically active. I think it's an older, thicker plate. He paused. We actually did some light mining there since there was no intelligent life to deal with. Huh. I looked at Bridget, and she shrugged. Okay, that's something for further investigation. But nevertheless, they have a boat made from a high-technology vessel of unknown origin, and they've put it literally on a pedestal. It's significant, and we have to figure out why. I paused. And what about the piece of wreckage? That is not human or Bob-made, Mario replied. It's definitely part of a scud assembly. You can't mistake the design, but it's way more advanced than our stuff.
But you can recognize the device's purpose?
Bridget asked. The advances are evolutionary, not revolutionary, Mario replied. But definitely decades ahead of us, at minimum. And yes, physics dictates what a Scud assembly is going to look like. So where are the builders? Good question, Howard. Good question. We were back in our apartment, and Bridget had been hammering away at her canvas for hours. Finally, she reclined in her chair, put her hand over her eyes, and moaned. All theater, of course, for a computer running an android body. Still, I could sympathize. She'd been poring over every video recording that showed some of the dragon's scrolls. Not going well, I said.
I've got spy drones watching over the shoulders of the other librarians to pick up as much as possible. It'd be great if I could just ask my subject to hold up the scroll so I could see it. But no, I have to depend on whatever they're doing, and keep the drone out of sight. The little drones are just camouflaged, not invisible. I can't risk moving them too much.
Yeah, I get it. So how's progress?
Not great. Gandalf and company only gave me the basic written vocabulary that you'd find out in public and maybe in people's homes. These scrolls contain about 80% of the dragon language that I don't have documentation for. And no pictures, and no one reads out loud, so I'm having trouble establishing enough context to identify words.
She paused.
The scrolls I'm personally able to look at are mostly tables of numbers. Numbers are a lot easier. Well, a little easier. They don't use a numeric system like we do. It's more like the love child of Roman numerals and cuneiform, but it is numbers.
And they are counting...
fish,
she nodded.
As we expected. And yes, the numbers are going down. And have been for a while.
Down? As in...
There are fewer fish every year. Significantly so,
Bridget frowned.
This guy is looking less and less like a standard despot. He's definitely onto something. I'm just not sure what.
Look, Bridge, Alexander may be a nut about counting fish, but his army is basically a mob with armbands. Some of the people from the Hunter are now part of the army. You put on an armband and you're in.
So you want to enlist?
It's either that or let them cut my wing feathers off and stick me in front of a table full of books. I raised my voice as Bridget held up a finger. No, that's not an option. Despite my flippant words, I didn't actually know if it was that easy to join the army. Still, I had to assume that your average dragon wouldn't be much better informed. There was only one way to find out. I landed on one of the occupied floaters at the edge of the flotilla and walked up to a squad of Alexandrians. I want to join up, I said.
Why?
The squad leader replied. Because I'm tired of making 2 EV for coppers all day, every day. You guys are doing something, and it looks more interesting than being a kiosk tender for the rest of my life. I'd subtly adjusted my features to be on the younger side. If dragon biology ran anything at all like human biology, then a teenager wanting to enlist would be believable anywhere. The squad leader grinned at me.
I hear that.
She reached into her front pack, pulled out an armband, and handed it to me. Rather than the standard blue and white, it was just blue. I deliberately and obviously looked from the item in my hand to the ones on their arms and back again.
You're a probie for now,
she chuckled.
You start at the bottom just like everyone else. Now, how about you go get us all some 2 EV?
Later, mugs of 2 EV having been handed out to everyone, I sidled up to the nearest soldier. So when do I get a spear? He looked me up and down, a smile on his face.
Soon as you hit puberty, kiddo.
A pause to judge my reaction. I tried to look hard done by, and he laughed and continued.
You'll get one at next muster. It's not like we have them lying around. Real metal tips.
He waved his spear point under my nose for emphasis.
None of that flint crap we usually run up against.
So why are you doing this, taking over floaters?
Alexander needs floaters. Something to do with all those dome heads he's got working with books. Counting fish, we're told.
The soldier looked uncomfortable, glancing around us, then lowered his voice.
Word is, there are fewer fish every year. Soon, people will start starving.
But why take over floaters? Is he trying to move everyone? Why not just explain the problem? My conversational partner shrugged.
I don't make policy, noob. But you'll find in life that people will very rarely do the right thing if they're told to, even if refusing harms them. Dragons are funny that way.
Probably another universal, I thought to myself. It probably came with intelligence. Although, it closely described cats, too. But the explanation did seem to jibe with what Bridget had been able to pick up so far. Were we dealing with someone trying to save the dragon race? I emailed a transcript of the conversation to Bridget, along with my concerns. She was doubtless busily going through scrolls, so distracting her wouldn't be smart. Meanwhile, the catchphrase "hurry up and wait" seemed to apply to armies everywhere. It looked very much like my group was settling in for a long session of standing around doing nothing. Are we going to see any action? I said into the silence. It seemed like something a teenager would say and maybe get slapped down for. Sure enough, the squad leader, who the translator tagged as Ursula for some reason, barked a laugh and said,
"Sounds like the noob is volunteering. We need some food, noob. How about you go with Bert here and haul something back?"
Well, it wasn't much, but at least it was motion. Trying to look miffed, I followed Bert as he launched himself into the air. "Are we going fishing?" I called to Bert.
"Sure thing, young'un. Fishing at the commissary. We got other people who take care of the gathering. Dried fish. Yum."
The comment sounded so much like Bob One complaining during his Quinlan adventure that I had to bite back a laugh. But although stocking up on food made sense for an army, it didn't make sense when there was food for the taking in every lake. Or was there? Just how bad was this shortage? My thoughts were interrupted by Bridget calling on the intercom.
"How are you doing? Found out anything?"
I recognized that tone. I used it far too often myself. It was the "I've got news, but I'll politely ask about your day first" tone. I answered, "Nothing compared to what you've got for me, apparently."
"Was I that obvious?" she replied.
I could hear the amusement in her voice, though, so I knew it had been on purpose. I waited silently, and after a moment she continued,
"Seems this fish shortage thing is cyclical, and Alexander was telling the truth. He started his campaign after the stocks started dropping. Curiouser and curiouser."
I sighed and signed off, but I was still worried. And it didn't help in the least that Bridget and I were physically light years away. That was still my wife, and if anyone harmed her, I'd what? Act like a vengeful god? Rain down fire from the heavens? Rain it in, Howard. They're just drannies. For the first time, I began to wonder if this expedition was a good idea.